Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on Newstalk.
Good morning and welcome to Breakfast Business, and thank you as ever to Shane Beattie. It is Monday, the 7th of July at 6:31. Coming up on today's show, we'll be talking about visitor attractions amid a slowdown in tourism. And we'll be looking at house prices and rents and all the markets as usual. You can email us, business@newstalk.com. But first, let's have a look at the main business stories in the papers and websites, which you shall do with someone who knows a fair bit about globalization and trade. Michael O'Sullivan is one of the directors of Unio Wealth Management and author of the book, The Leveling, about the end of globalization. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Mike, can we start with tariffs? We learned last night that Trump has once again chickened out and postponed the end of the so-called pause until August.
Joe, lots of conflicting signals coming out of Washington, because he's also threatened some of the BRICS countries with a higher tariff. So the idea, I think, is that there's a push on to get tariff deals done or get trade deals done. And I think if I look back on the last 5 months of the second Trump presidency, what's remarkable on one hand is that so little has changed. The bond market is where it was back in February. The stock market is actually higher, given everything that's happened. And I think for me as an investor at Unio, maybe the thing that has changed is that international investors are more wary of US assets, and in particular the dollar. That's probably the big story. And most investors, I think, are now looking to hedge dollar exposure. What I mean by that is to either buy assets that are not in dollars or to buy assets that are US located but in another currency. So I think as all of this tariff noise goes on, just at the margin, the real effect is that people are beginning to question the financial primacy of the US.
That's very interesting, because that was untouchable for something like 70 years. And now people are starting to think out loud about that. Of course, it's not obvious which currency they move into, whether that's the yuan or the euro or maybe even Bitcoin. Who knows? Let's focus a little bit more about these tariff letters. Supposedly, they're being sent out today at 5 p.m. Irish time, which seems to conflict with the fact that there's 3 extra weeks to negotiate.
So, Joe, I think any accounts I've heard from what actually happens in the White House suggest that there's going to be 2 or 3 different factions vying for Trump's attention. He is the world king, if you like. He's the decider. But you have Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, who is much less in favor of tariffs. And then you've got some of the trade secretaries, the commerce secretary, who are much more aggressive. So I think the fact that there's a contradiction in the process speaks to the fact that you have these competing agendas within the White House. And again, I think the Trump method is just to try and put pressure on his adversaries and see what he can squeeze out of them. And it's going to be quite difficult for Europe, because Europe doesn't want to swallow a 10% tariff along the lines of the deal the UK got. And they would rather take much more time. And I think there'll be a lot of pushback at the country level to some of the things that Trump wants to put in place, such as the export of U.S. foods into Europe.
Mm. Is it even worth commenting on the fact that he's talking about a 10% additional tariff on BRICS nations? They, of course, are Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa, but also quite a few new countries are joining the BRICS, like Indonesia and other nations in Africa.
I think, Joe, the really big one is China. India has been trying very hard to have good diplomatic relations with the US, and there is a process ongoing there. The really difficult one is China. And I think one of the reasons Trump backed off from his initial tariff announcement in April is that they realized that China holds as many good cards as the US does. And one of the things China has been doing, which I think hasn't got many of the headlines, is that it's been restricting the export of rare earth minerals to the US and beyond. Mm. And of course, they are critical for defense technologies, mobile phones, etc. So I think the US-China trade dispute and the bigger geopolitical rivalry between them is really the one to watch.
Yeah. The OECD global tax deal that was haggled out about 3 or so years ago, Ireland moved its rate from 12.5% up to 15% for larger US companies. What is the latest with that? Because it seems as if there's an exemption going to be given to large US multinationals.
It does, Joe. That's probably not a bad thing for Ireland immediately. And I think one of the other trends behind the Trump policies is just a process of deregulation. We just had his big budget passed in the US, which I think will favor many medium-sized to large corporations. There's deregulation across a whole range of industries. And he effectively looks like he's killed off this OECD deal. It doesn't look at the moment like anyone is going to try and stand up to him. I think the other issue, because this is so pertinent to Ireland, is who would be the multinational investors of the future in Ireland? And I think if we look at investment trends, there was certainly a hiatus or a break in investment activity by large companies in April and May. It looks like that's coming back slowly. But I think many multinationals are still being very, very cautious as to where they would locate, really heavy plant and factories into the future.
Mm. And finally, a little bit of politics. The America Party. What do you make of that? Elon Musk's latest venture.
I think it's fascinating, Joe, because I've always thought that the UK and the US political systems in particular, because they are two-party systems, are ripe to disruption. And Elon Musk is the disruptor par excellence. I think there's two ways of looking at this. One, he's setting up the America Party to give himself leverage because Tesla would have lost out effectively in this latest budget because a lot of the tax and environmental credits that they enjoyed have been shut down. So he's potentially using this new party to gain power at the margin over congressmen and women and senators and maybe reset the agenda there. Or there's a much more interesting development going on, which is that he and others like Peter Thiel and many of the people around Trump have a slightly different political vision, and one that uses technology very aggressively in the state. It uses AI in the economy, and it uses technology maybe in a more nefarious way to in terms of social control, etc. My money at the moment is with the former, that Musk just wants to gain political leverage.
Of course, the last time there was a third party candidate was when Ross Perot deprived George H.W. Bush of re-election back in 1992. I just wonder who would lose out if he did throw his money where his mouth is in the creation of a third party. Would it be the Republicans or would it be the Democrats?
I think at the margin, what Musk is probably going to target are some of the Republicans, because that I think is the voter base that identifies probably more closely with Musk and his approach. Mm. Ironically, of course, Ross Perot campaigned on a set of policies that Trump is now implementing.
Yeah, that's it. Is ironic, all right. Mike, thanks very much for joining us. Have a great week. That is Michael O'Sullivan there, Director of Unio Wealth Management.
Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on News Talk.